Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Blue Half Podcast, Episode 5. I'm Roger Armstrong, and as you may recall, last week we had four different guests from all around the world, from Australia, from Virginia, from Chicago, and of course from Toronto. This episode is only going to have one guest, but a very special guest, and he's coming all the way from sunny, I hope, Frodsham. I'm joined today by Brendan Connolly, who is the chairman of the Everton Football Club Heritage Society. Hello, Brendan.
Hello, Roger. Good afternoon.
Now, thanks very much for joining me today. I really think this is going to be an interesting discussion, both personally for me and hopefully for our listeners. It is just past the 40th anniversary of the passing of the great Dixie Dean on the 1st of March, 1980. And I thought this was an appropriate time to find out a little bit more for those who don't and those who do to educate themselves further as to exactly what happens with the Heritage Society. I'm sure a lot of us know that there's stuff available in St. Luke's Church, and we all know the song, If You Know Your History. But take us back to the beginning, can you, Brendan, and tell us how the society was formed and your role in it today.
Yes, certainly, Roger. Well, I'd known David France for some time because I was a collector like David. And in 2009, David decided to set up the Heritage Society. And there were a number of people involved at that time. So David, obviously myself, people like Paul Wharton and George Orr were involved in the early days. And I think we, if I'm honest, maybe once we'd lost the guidance of David when he moved to the States, we maybe struggled for a little bit of direction in those early days. And I think back to meetings at Crosby Lakeside Adventure Centre. As I say, I think it's fair to say we struggled a little bit for direction. But certainly, I think in more recent years, we've certainly managed to pass that stage. And I think we know managing to contribute an awful lot, but as we move on, we can talk a little bit more about that. But that's the background to the formation. We were collectors, authors, researchers, historians. So authors now in the society have managed to rack up over 60 books between them. People like Ken Rogers, Dave Prentice, yeah, Zotchek, Rob Sawyer. A combination of that kind of people. People who had a special interest in some kind of background to the history of the club.
Okay, now Dr. David France, a remarkable guy. I remember seeing his interview on Toffee TV a few years ago. You know, a great advocate of the importance of history and a great collector of memorabilia. Does he have much of a role to play nowadays?
David has taken more of a back seat in the last few years, Roger.
His health's not good. Is that right?
Partly due to his health issues.
Yeah.
I'm pleased to report that I think he is in a better state at the moment. And
that's good.
Is hoping to come over in May to catch a game or two at the end of the season.
Okay. So just tell me personally, you know, I often ask guests about their Everton credentials. So let's just rewind a little bit. How did your affiliation to Everton come about? And then how did you become a collector of memorabilia? How did you become so obsessive, Brendan?
Well, I was born in Widnes, which, again, coincidentally, is David's birthplace as well.
Yeah.
In the late 60s, early 70s, I started watching the club. I'd be around 10 at the time when I started watching. I used to go along with my cousin, Mike Kelleher. And then later in life, I started to collect seriously. I guess like many people, when I was young, I used to collect programmes. They ended up in a box under the bed at my mum's, and one day she requested that I remove them, get them out of the way, and I think that sort of triggered the starting of serious involvement in collecting memorabilia about 30 years ago. It was always a challenge because if there's anything worth having, you were competing against David in the early days, which was no easy task. But as I got to know David better, he was good enough to let me pick up some crumbs at auction, and the collection just grew and grew over the years.
So your first game, who would that have been against? Do you remember it?
I think I do. I think my first game was against Leicester in 1968, I think it was.
Okay.
And again, coincidentally, I've just bought some press photographs from that game this week. One of Jerry Humphreys scoring a goal, and I think it was Jimmy Husband scoring the seventh goal from the penalty spot in a 7-1 win. So it was a great
start. So you picked a good game.
The Blues, yes. And of course, it's been downhill ever since.
well, not quite, because you've seen, obviously, 69-70, we won the league. Did you see many games that season?
I didn't really that season. I think, as I said, my first game was 68.
Right.
I was young. My father had died when I was six, so I didn't really have the opportunity to get to many games.
Right.
But I started going with my cousin Mike, as I said, quite seriously in the early 70s. And by the mid-70s, I was going to all the away games.
And so that's the sort of... there's a great book by Brian Viner, isn't it?
Yes.
Looking for... What's it called? Looking for the Blues? Looking for...
Yeah, something like that. He spoke to players who played in the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, and those are some of my earliest memories, you know, watching Everton in the 70s and players like Latchford and the Gordon Lee era, and losing League Cup semi-finals to Aston Villa, and losing West Ham and things like that. People running around corner flags and the ridiculous Welsh referee. Not that his Welshness has got anything to do with it, you know. But the 70s was full of missed chances, wasn't it? So what might have been in the 70s? Really?
Absolutely. Yeah. Even starting with the. The FA Cup semi-final against Liverpool when Brian Laborn unfortunately had to go off when we were injured when we were 1-0 up, and of course we lost 2-1. But yes, as you say, the Milk Cup finals into the 80s, the semi-final defeats. You could go on forever, couldn't you? The League Cup final. But they were great days. I mean, absolutely loved following the club in the 70s, and the disappointments were difficult to take, but absolutely loved the time of watching the Blues. Yeah.
Now let's just fast forward a little bit. So nowadays on match days in St Luke's, you have quite a lot of memorabilia on display there. Some of it's for purchase, some of it isn't. Most of it is really a sort of travelling exhibition, isn't it, on a match day?
Yes, it's a combination of the two, as you suggest, Roger. We have displays which we try to keep changing to maintain people's interest. We have Tom Regan's Toffee Art.
Yeah.
The Rulaturas have a stand there, Reg Fletcher, Richie Gillam, Paul Kelly, Steve Blees, Joe Brennan from the Society. Run stalls there as well. I have my own stall where I tend to sell some of the surplus memorabilia that I've acquired over the years. Sometimes you'll pick up a collection and you know the person will want to sell the whole collection. Maybe I'll tend to keep the items I want for my own collection and sell on other stuff to allow people to grow their collection. We also have book signings. Former players come in and do book signings. We've had Neville Southall, Dave Thomas, Ronnie Goodless, some of the players who've been in to do book signings, Bob Latchford as well. And we're really fortunate in that we get a lot of programmes donated by supporters. We sell those programmes and the money that we raise goes to fund some of the projects that we run. We also have another member, Crawford Miles, who produces videos for us. So Crawford has a wonderful catalogue of goals from years gone by. Crawford always pulls together a video or a DVD even these days of games against the opponents of the day.
Yeah.
And we play those as well.
I remember the Neville Southall book signing with particular fondness because it was my dad's 80th birthday that day. I think we were playing Burnley at home. We won 1-0 and just happened. I'd seen on Twitter just before the match that, you know, Neville was there. And we went upstairs and my dad had his photo with Neville, and it was
lovely, yeah.
Extraordinary. You know, he was like a kid. This 80-year-old guy was just totally enraptured by the great man. The greatest goalkeeper certainly I've ever seen. And he's such a wonderful guy. So there is a connection. Let me just talk a little bit about former players, because I want to talk about Dixie specifically. But I know that Dr. David Franz had a lot to do with the setting up of the Former Players Foundation.
Yeah.
And what, if any, is the connection between the society, the Heritage Society itself, and the and any of those sort of former players type bodies?
There isn't a direct connection as such, Roger, but we all try to work together. And the club, again, has been very good in this. The club some years ago set up a super community, which the intention was to pull together the likes of the Heritage Society, former players, the Shareholders Association, the ladies team, with a view to trying to find ways that we could work together.
Okay.
So that's worked quite well. And we do have links. I've worked with Henry Mooney from the former players to achieve a couple of things in the past. So we always try and work together.
So I asked people overnight on Twitter sort of questions, and I've got a number of them to put to you. And it's probably a good time to put the first one, which is probably the most significant one. Because again, when I refer back to this interview, I remember David France doing with Ped and Baz on the sofa in Toffee TV HQ, talked about his desire to have a proper Everton museum.
Yeah.
And obviously with the move to a new stadium, that might be possible to incorporate that rich heritage and this fantastically diverse and impressive history that we have into some kind of public exhibition of this Everton collection. Can you fill us in on any plans or your hopes to be able to incorporate that with the move to Bramley Moor, Bren?
Yeah, sure. Well, when the Heritage Society was originally set up, Roger, one of David's aims and objectives for the society was to promote the Everton collection and provide support for the Everton Collection Trust. And that's something that we've tried to do over the years. I've worked quite closely with Lord Grantchester to ensure that we don't bid against each other at auction. And I managed to secure, working with the Everton Collection, a gold medal from our first championship winning season in 1890-91. Yeah, we work together. As I say, try to avoid bidding against each other to get the best benefit for the club generally. On the note of the move to Bramley Moor, I think the society, the fans forum, and the football club are all keen to see something there happen, and we're all in discussion with each other and Lord Grantchester and the trustees of the Everton Collection. To find a way that collection can be used in the best possible way. And those conversations are ongoing. I am conscious that I think it's, you know, it's very difficult to make museums financially viable. But I think for me, if you were to have a museum at Bramley Moor and you have restaurants that are open, bars and restaurants that are open, not just on a match day, but every day of the week, you do stadium tours, you know, you have a museum, you've got a captive audience then for the bars and restaurants, and that may get round the fact that, as I say, generally speaking, museums are not financially viable. But if you build it into the full package, then hopefully it will be commercially sensible. As I say, the conversations are ongoing with the club, and I think we're all of the same intention to make something work along those lines.
Yeah, that's encouraging. I mean, I take your point about museums, and of course, Farhad very memorably said that he didn't want us to be a museum. And I want to talk about that a little bit later as well. But last week, you may recall, I talked to these supporters from all over the world. And as we know, we have Evertonians all over the world, Everton supporters groups stretching far and wide around the globe. And clearly, not all of them are able readily and easily to get to Goodison to games or to Bramley Moor or, you know, even to visit a museum. So there must be opportunities to digitize in some way video tours or whatever of the Everton collection to make it accessible to fans who are, you know, perhaps unaware of some of the things that have gone on. And to bring that to life rather than it just being a, you know, a static thing. I'm sure that's something that's on the agenda too.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, the Everton collection already have a very good website where yep. a lot of the items are digitized. The collection is probably heavily based around programs. But yeah, the collection is mainly digitized. On the website, which is accessible by anybody.
Great.
Of course, it would be even better to see it in real life.
Yes, of course it would. Let me ask you a question that's come from Mark on Twitter, Scouseman Blue. He wants to know, how on earth do you put a value on some of this memorabilia? You know, if you're bidding at auction, you know, how do you get a price for a sense of what a fair value might be?
It's a very good question, and I guess to some degree it comes down to what people are prepared to pay. You know, there's no exact science to this, which is one of the difficulties, you know, particularly when you're buying and selling, it is difficult to be accurate. You know, a lot of things you'll be working from previous values. So, for example, an FA Cup winner's medal, if that comes up for auction, you know, the likelihood is that it will be 5,000 or so minimum and possibly more, and then you're down to the demand really,
okay,
as to how much anybody wants it. And of course, if two people want it or more, then the demand drives the price. But it is a very good question. It's not an easy one. You know, for example, some programs, you know, one program from one season could be worth 10 times the value of programs from another season. An example of that being, somebody was after the home program against Fulham a week or two back in the 52-53 season. Now, that was played in an afternoon at Goodison before we had floodlights, and the attendance was just over 10,000. Now, that was 3 or 4 days after we played Bolton in the semi-final in front of 75,000. So, again, it just gives you a feel for the fact that, you know, a semi-final with 75,000, because it was a semi-final, people would be inclined to keep the programme. A midweek game against Fulham at home, maybe not inclined to keep the programme. Therefore, they become very rare. So, you know, the attendance at the game will be a factor if we're talking about programmes.
Yeah.
Some of the other memorabilia does get a lot more difficult to value.
Okay. Let's move on to Dixie and just how significant a figure he is, both within the society, historical figure, of course, and you know, within the history of the football club. Because really what you're doing, you're all historians, you're writing and you're researching and you're collecting stuff relating to the history of Everton. In your opinion, Brendan, how significant is Dixie? Is he the number one? Is he untouchable? Is he the father of the club? If so, why? And what is his legacy and what's his influence still today?
I think it's difficult to underestimate the significance of Dixie. If we think, you know, this guy played, it's nearly 100 years ago now, and everybody still talks about him.
Mm-hmm.
There was a programme on the TV a week or two back about Jimmy Greaves, and I think they were describing Jimmy Greaves as the best goal scorer ever. Well, you know, I think most Evertonians would dispute that. And a lot of people, I think, tend to forget things that happened before their lifetime. You know, clearly as Evertonians, we absolutely adore Dixie. Supporters of other clubs maybe overlook his contribution. But, you know, to score 60 goals in 39 games in a league season is just phenomenal. I don't think it will ever be beaten. I'm sure it won't really. But yeah, as I say, the significance of the man in the club's history is absolutely massive. It's just difficult to put into words how big it is.
And can we just try and nail something? Because I hear people saying that William Ralph Dean, he didn't like being called Dixie. He didn't want to be called Dixie. He didn't answer to the name. Can you tell us whether that's true or false or an urban myth?
I think there's certainly an element of truth in it, Roger. I think certainly in the early days, when I think he was first being called Dixie. And again, there's different views on exactly what he was called originally and why he was called it. Some people say it was Dixie, others say it was Digsy because he used to dig people in the ribs when he was going up for a challenge. There certainly seems to be a view that he wasn't keen on the nickname, and he tended to refer to himself as Bill. But I think in later days, I think probably the pressure of being called Dixie so often, I think he probably just gave up in the end. One of our members, Ken Rogers, who most people will know as former sports editor of the Echo, he's really the expert on Dixie and has interviewed him many times. I'd say Ken is probably the best person to run that question by with any authority.
Okay, thank you. Now, in terms of memorabilia and in terms of program, you talked about programs. Tell us a bit about some of the other stuff that the Heritage Society has and that you collect and that's in the Everton collection, because, you know, not just programs. What are we talking? Kits, we're talking shirts, we're talking boots, medals. And what's the most valuable piece in your own collection, Brendan?
Gosh, people often ask this question, Roger, what's the most valuable or what's your favourite item? And the favourite item tends to change depending on the mood I'm in. But the four or five items that would be top of my list would be a winner's medal from the Cup Winners' Cup final. For novelty value, I have...
And you have one of those, do you, Brendan?
Yes,
I do. Whose is it, if I ask?
Probably better not to say, really.
Okay.
I have, for novelty value, one of my favourites and always goes down well is Dixie Dean's passport from the 30s. I have a number of international caps. My favourite is one from Charlie G when England played Spain in the 30s, and it's a lovely golden red colour. The caps that were produced pre-war tended to be in the colours of the opposition, so hence the red and gold for Spain. So there's some of my favourites. Another one is a menu card from the opening of Goodison Park in 1892. There was a dinner held at the Adelphi Hotel to celebrate the event. And they're some of my favourites. And quite a lot of my memorabilia is on display at the Royal Liver Buildings at the moment in the Everton offices.
Nice. And you are getting personally, and the society itself is getting a lot of support from the club, from the current sort of executive team and the management team, yeah?
Yeah, the support we get from the club is fantastic, Roger. Over the last 2-3 years, that's improved beyond recognition. I have to mention people like Richard Kenyon, Scott McLeod, Darren Griffiths, who have been great. We meet every month at the Liver Buildings. We previously met at Goodison. That was obviously arranged by the club. Susie Parker, Christine Pryor, Ali James, Elle Barnes-Reen, Sharon Borland, Davy Thompson, Mitch Clay, Karina Duffy, all people at the club who have helped us immensely. And we really, really value that support and the recognition that we get from the club. And likewise, I'd like to think that, you know, we're able to help them as well. And they're very complimentary of the work that we do.
It's all about brand, isn't it? You know, we're talking about here you are collecting programs and medals and all kinds of stuff. But it's all about the brand. It's all about the brand of Everton Football Club. I'd like to just ask you a little bit about managers now, because you know, the managers we've had, the managers you've seen, maybe from, you know, Catterick onwards, do you think they all got the club to a greater or lesser extent, or do you think some were much more touched by it, obviously Howard, than others? And have they got involved? Have you had much to do with managers, particularly in recent times, who've wanted to know more about the history? Roberto seemed very keen to embrace it.
Roberto is probably the best example in recent years, Roger. Yeah. Roberto came along to St. Luke's to have a look at what we did, and again was very supportive. And I think Roberto certainly, yes, did get the club. If I'm honest, I think people who followed him saw Ronald Koeman, Sam Allardyce, dare I mention.
No, you don't mention. No.
Definitely didn't get the club.
Yeah.
But hopefully we now have the manager who's back on course, and I believe maybe to the extent that he was even spotted in the Bootlestrand shopping centre yesterday. So,
yeah,
I saw that. Closer to the fans than that, I guess.
I'm not sure if there's any truth that he had Gylfi Sigurdsson with him and was going into the cash converter store. He's just a dude, isn't he? You know, Carlo. Yeah, yeah. He gets the place, you know, and I think he gets the history of the club and what it means to the city. I remember watching last year the Diego Maradona documentary. I don't know if you've seen that film.
Yes, I think I did. Yeah.
And that was so good at showing the relationship between the fans and the city to the club, to Napoli, and obviously where Carlo's come from, his most recent appointment or his most recent job. And from day one, he seemed to want to get the city and get the culture and the position of the club within that, which can only be a good thing.
Definitely, yeah. I think he's made that quite clear that he certainly likes the city. And I think he did liken it to Napoli, didn't he, in the fact that it's a seaport with a lot of working class people. Yeah.
Yeah. And a team playing in blue.
Indeed. Yeah.
Coming back to history, and this is something that, I mean, maybe like a lot of fans, I have a kind of love-hate relationship with our history. I've been lucky enough to see us win league titles and a couple of FA Cups. And, you know, there are people in their 30s who haven't seen us win anything. And why do you think it is that we cling on to our history and we make such a big deal about it? Because lots of other clubs have history too. I mean, they all do, but, you know, some are more successful than others. Why do you think we make such a big deal about ours, Brendan?
I think it's because, in the, you know, we were founder members of the Football League. We had success early on, winning the league and the FA Cup before 1906. I think We shouldn't get carried away, though, either by the fact that not every Evertonian is massively impressed by the history. I think maybe an increasing number are more keen to see success on the pitch in the current day. And also, I guess, if we go back to when the Everton collection was looking to be acquired, there were street collections outside the game and to be blunt, you know, those street collections didn't receive an awful lot of donations. So I think, you know, one of the things that we sometimes get a bit frustrated in at the society is that people don't all share our same interests. But, you know, it's each their own, I guess. Other clubs, I think it's good when we get some away supporters in at St. Luke's. And generally speaking, they're really impressed with what we do in St. Luke's. And the feedback is really positive. And quite often, away supporters will say, I wish we had something like this at our club.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think other clubs do have a history and will be impressed by it. But I think we always like to be first with everything, don't we, Roger? We've got so many famous firsts in our history. And I think to some degree that the Heritage Society is another one. And we've had people come into us from Notts County and Ipswich, just to mention two clubs, to see what we do. And you know, they're interested in doing something similar.
Interesting. You made this point earlier about three other collections. What did you mean about that?
Sorry, which one was that?
Well, you said that I asked you why do we make so much more about our history than other clubs, and then you were talking about the Everton collection, and you said there were three other collections out there that didn't get many donations.
Oh no, sorry, the street collections. They had bucket collections before a home game, when the Everton collection was looking to be acquired from David France.
Oh, I see.
Collections
and with too many collections going on.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a danger from the half empty side of the fence where I tend to sit, that the history is it's this comfort blanket that we all cling on to. And Huddersfield Town have got three stars on their shirt, haven't they? I think.
Yep. Won the league three times in the late 20s, I think, if memory serves right.
Yeah, and even now, people will put forward, let's pick someone, or Preston, as FA Cup winners, and Tom Finney this and Tom Finney that. And, I'm down here on the South Coast, and just up the road, there's a club called Portsmouth. And they won the FA Cup more. They've won a trophy more recently than we have, and they've disappeared into oblivion at the moment, in bouncing back, arguably. But do you think that the history it can be a force for good, of course. But do you think it's still enough of an impetus for people to actually want us to be competing at the high table? I cast my mind back to the Howard's Way film and the great, wonderful work that Rob Sloman did to bring all that to life. Yeah. But that's now nearly 40 years ago, for the love of God. Do you think the history is enough of a motivation, or does it make us think, oh, it's all right because we'll always have our history,
No, I don't think anybody takes that view, Roger. I guess it can be a millstone to some degree, and dare I say, maybe another millstone could be the club motto, couldn't it? Nil sine sinensi optum, because that's, again, something that's often thrown in people's faces if things aren't going right. You mentioned Preston, and there are many other examples, aren't there? Wolves, Blackpool, Preston were one of the top sides over 100 years ago, and look where they are now, similar with Blackpool, as I say. So I think there's an element of course, be careful what you wish for also. People have looked for quick wins, and it hasn't always worked out. Poor old Bill Kenwright, of course, has his detractors, but hopefully people now see maybe that Bill has bided his time to make sure that we do hopefully get the right buyer in. That's somebody who is looking to invest long term and deliver that success on the pitch, rather than somebody who's just looking to bleed the club dry, as we've seen happen at so many clubs over recent years.
Well, we have, but you mentioned Wolves there, Brent, and they would be the model, Look at what they're doing. Look at the manager they've got. Look at the players they've got, the style of play, the routes that they've put down, And apparently when you're in the Europa League, it really messes up your season. Well, it's not messing theirs up. And they started in July, and, they've just gone to Spurs and given them a thumping. Yeah. And whilst I'd love Everton to get into the Champions League, I'd really quite like Wolves too. I remember we met some Wolves fans before the game last season, I think. We were chatting to them in the pub before the game, and they said, right, what you've got to do with us is you've got to press high, really press high, because Connor Cody drops in, gets the ball and pings it out to the fullbacks. And if you do that, you'll be fine. We didn't do that and we got beat.
Yeah.
So let's bring this up to the present day. We've talked a little bit about Carlo, but yes, we've got Mashiri. Mashiri's been there for 4 years. We've blown quite a bit of cash. But where do you think we're going to go this season, and where do you see us going the next couple of seasons, hopefully under Don Carlo?
This season, I still think it's a bigger challenge now after the last couple of games, but I still think we've got to try and target a European place.
Yeah,
I know a lot of people think that the Europa League, as you indicated then with Wolves as the example, Roger, that Europa League's not particularly a good thing. I love the Europa League from a personal point of view. I've had some fantastic trips away to places in Russia, Ukraine, Romania. I love it as a tournament.
Did you go to Kharkiv away?
I did go to Kharkiv away, yes. It's a fantastic trip. And it's things like that. I think, you know, if at some time in the future we qualify for the Champions League, it'll be fantastic. But for me, places like Kharkiv are much better than going to places like Paris, Munich, Amsterdam, places that you've probably been to anyway. The places that you go to in the Europa League that you've never even heard of before, places like Olomouc, Krasnodar, fantastic places that you'd never go to, but it gives you a great opportunity. I'm getting into a personal preference now rather than the football side. I still think we've got to aim for Europa League at least. I think it's the only way to progress and to attract better players. Clearly, the manager will help in that. You know, when you've got a manager of that status in, he is going to attract better players. But we need to finish as high up that league as we can to encourage those players to join us.
Yeah, definitely. And then what do you think at the summer? You know, Carlo faces a job not so much to make signings as to actually get a few out the door. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's been a challenge for 2 or 3 years now, hasn't it, Roger? Unfortunately, through the poor recruitment of previous managers. But most of those players will be coming to the end of the contract now and can finally depart.
I'm not sure Gylfi is.
No, Gylfi is a difficult one. I have a lot of time for Gylfi. I like him as a player. The question I've asked time and time again and never really had an answer, describe another player in the Premier League or anywhere in world football that is the same style of player as Gylfi. I've never got an answer to that one, and I struggle myself to think what's his best position. For me, there isn't a question that technically is a good player, clearly is dead ball and delivery is very good. But we've got to find a way. If he's going to stay, we've got to find a way that we can build that midfield around him. I'm not so sure we can find that because, as I say, I think he's almost a one-off. And I don't know how you fit him in, really. But fingers crossed.
Yeah, Gylfi is an enigma. I was unsure about the signing and barring the odd wonder goal. And yes, a decent return in terms of goals and assists last season. I never ever thought of him as a number 10.
No, I would agree.
I never thought he was that kind of player. And then rather like with Wilf Sahar, who obviously had a brief encounter at Manchester United and then ran away back home to Crystal Palace, Gylfi had a similar experience at Tottenham where he couldn't do it at a big club. And is he just a flat track bully? Good with a dead ball, but not that good at Everton. He scored the odd free kick and his corners are, you know, they're not that effective. I know we've scored a few goals from them, but the quality of the delivery is poor. For me, he can't win a tackle. He doesn't compete well enough. You know, I agree with you. He's not a box-to-box. He's not creative. He's not the Silky Gomez type. He's not an Arteta type. He's not a Timmy Cahill. He's not even, should I say, a Steven Gerrard or even a Xabi Alonso. I mean, maybe he's a bit of a Xabi Alonso, but he's a poor man's version. And I think he was a vanity purchase, to be honest with you. I don't really have a problem with signing players and they don't work out, but our error more than ever has been giving them such long contracts and such massive wages, which mean that, you know, they can just sit on their arse, which, you know, arguably cost us a goal on Sunday. I just thought there was such an irony of Gylfi being sat down in the 6-yard box.
I think some people have been a bit harsh again there because there's no doubt he was fouled.
It should have been rewound for a penalty, without question. No, absolutely. Yeah, it's a difficult one. But I hope that Carlo can get a few out the door. I mean, I hope that he's playing Gylfi in the hope that Gylfi does something and, you know, somebody comes along next season and maybe a newly promoted club gives him the captain's armband and, you know, maybe he plays for Leeds United. I don't know. But it's difficult to see how he fits in when Obviously, Carlo likes to play with width, and you'd like to think Gomez, if he remains fit, is the main man, and therefore he needs a Tom Davis or a Schneiderlin or a Delph alongside him, and Guilfi can't do any of those. It's it's really tricky. Let me ask you a final question. We've talked about Dixie, but outside of Dixie, who do you think are the top three players or managers or characters, owners in the history of the football club? I've got my idea of who they are, but I'd like to hear yours.
Gosh,
well, if we're talking about in the history, that really opens it up. As I say, many people, I think, or most people, probably just concentrate on within their lifetime.
Yeah.
I think Dixie breaks that mould. I would normally say to judge a player, you've got to see him. But again, as we said earlier, Dixie's record just speaks for itself. So for me, he would have to be number one. You put me on the spot a bit here, but I would have to say, I think Howard would have to be number two.
Yeah.
For what he contributed both as a player and as a manager, winning league titles each time. So, you know, a fantastic contribution from Howard there. And I guess if I had to put a personal spin on it, maybe not the best, well, certainly not the best player, but a hero from my time watching the Blues in those heydays that we spoke about earlier in the 1970s, I think we'd have to give Big Bob a mention. Because, you know, fairly ropey days at times, but Bob was a hero, I think, for most people. So they would be certainly in my top 10. I'm sure there would be people out there screaming, "You've forgotten whoever," but I think they would have to be right up there for me.
What about John Moores?
Yeah, John's an interesting one. Yeah, the Merseyside Millionaires in the 60s. Quite a strong man. Brought Harry Catterick in. Obviously, again, two league titles and FA Cup win in the 60s. So certainly a very significant character. But I think for me, as I say, I would certainly stick with Dixie and Howard ahead of him. Yeah, he would probably come in ahead of Bob, but I did say that was for sort of sympathetic reasons from my own perspective.
Well, fair enough. I would put John Moores in there. I would also put Neville. I think he's the greatest player we've ever had, outside of Dixie, of course. I think Neville Southall. So when you hear Neville talk, and I remember his words in the film in Howard's Way, he says, you know, you've got to be a Scouser, but you've got to understand what it means to be a Scouser. That doesn't mean you have to come from Liverpool. It means you've got to have that attitude that the fans will embrace you as one of your own.
And
I think he gets the club, and he still gets the club today. And it's sad that he's still a little bit on the outside. My dad would say Brian Lebone, and he would say T.E. Jones, apparently, who was the greatest player he ever saw.
T.E. Jones rather than T.E. or T.G.?
No, T.E. Thomas Edwin, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, T.G. Jones. No, T.G. The centre half. The centre half.
Again, but they were both centre halves, but I think most people's view would be T.G. would be the better of the two. Well, both Welsh internationals as well.
Yeah. T.G. Jones, yep. It was T.G.
Yeah, certainly an excellent player, yeah.
Right. Brendan, we could talk for hours, but we're approaching full time, and last week's episode had too much added time. I got into a bit of trouble. This is called the Blue Half Podcast. It's meant to be 45 minutes, and we're approaching full time. So before I say farewell, I want to thank you very much for coming on. Really, really interesting chatting to you and hearing about your collections and the Heritage Society. Just tell people a little bit more. Where can they go? Match day? What are the websites? What are the Twitter handles so that they can find out more?
Right. Okay. Well, as we say, we're at St. Luke's prior to every home game. We open 3 hours before kickoff, close half an hour before. Websites, a couple of excellent websites to mention, both run by members of ours. Steve Johnson's Everton Results.
Yeah.
Any stats that you want on the absolutely fantastic resource. Billy Smith, Blue Chronicles, another fantastic resource of match reports from the early days of the club right through. Yes, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, EFC Heritage Society.
Wonderful.
We have a couple of events coming up that may be worth a plug.
Please.
We have a grave event that we're just in the process of organising for Bobby Parker up in Scotland. Dates to be confirmed. We've done about 10 grave events already. So this is former players whose graves are in disrepair or haven't had a gravestone. Players like Billy Scott, Sandy Young, Will Cough. Obviously, Will wasn't a player, but again, you know, if you were talking about those most influential Evertonians, then
very much so, yes,
would be right up there again.
Yeah.
And we have a plaque event at the Winslow Hotel in a couple of weeks. We're along with Dave Bond from the Winslow, we're erecting plaques in memory of Jack Greenalsh and Bill Borthwick, who former players who were landlords of the Winslow. So they're couple of events that we're working on at the moment.
Let me just jump in and say thank you to Dave Bond at the Winslow. Great pre-match boozer, fantastic. And thank you to him for the hospitality he showed to the American Toffee podcasters, Alex and James, who I know were in there. And he also gave them a few steers in Dublin. So, Dave, thanks for that on behalf of Alex and James.
Great.
Right, Brendan, thank you very much for your time today. I'm sure that people will find out more and they will come and visit St. Luke's and they will look at the websites and they will find out more about the great history of this football club. Thanks very much for your time. Thank you to everyone for listening again. And I'm going to end with a piece of music from Squeeze, which I think you'll understand why when you hear it right away. Until the next time, thanks for listening. Thank you, Brendan.
Roger, thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity.
And up the Toffees.
Indeed. Come on, you Blues.
Drinks to remember, I'm me and myself. And winds up the clock and upstairs by the shelf. Home is a love that I miss very much. So the past has been bottled and made with love. Drinks to remember, I'm me and myself. Winds up the clock and knocks dust from the shelf. Home is a love that I miss very much. So the past has been bottled and made with love. The past has been bottled and made with love.